Hello and welcome into ESPN FC Daily. If you are watching from the United States, happy Thanksgiving. We're all
happy
enjoying
Thanksgiving.
Ourselves here. There you go. Kay Murray and Luis Miguel Echegaray. Thank goodness for Portugal Ghana bringing us 5 goals in the game. 3-2. It finished to Portugal because it hasn't been the most goal scoring days, we have to say, although we'll get to that just a little bit later on. Let's talk about this game between Portugal and Ghana, shall we, Luis?
Let's do it.
We can get into whether you thought it was a penalty or not later, because I know you're not going to be happy with that. But first of all, let's talk about the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo is the first man to score in 5 editions of the World Cup. That is quite an achievement.
An unbelievable achievement. And let's never take anything away from what Cristiano Ronaldo has done for the game and the World Cup. And obviously, it's notable to mention how you said men's World Cup, because Christine Sinclair, of course, and Marta have also done it at 5 World Cups for their respective countries. But yeah, an amazing achievement. And obviously, to your point, such a great game for the neutral, right? 5 goals, a lot of drama. And my goodness, you know, that final slip at the end there maybe could have caused even more telenovela news for the Ghanaian team, but remarkable for Ghana. And obviously we can decipher and break down exactly what happened, but a good game and a good game to start Thanksgiving. K. Murray, look where I am. I'm at my mother-in-law's house. I've been peeling potatoes and I cooked the turkey from 7 a.m.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm just like trying to sort things out. You can see I've got a house full, so even my camera was off today. Did you mention that slip at the end? Might that have been a goalkeeper slip, Luis?
Yeah, I think so. I think
it was. Should we get a goalkeeper in?
Yeah, let's do it.
As a representative, as the Goalkeepers Union, Shaka Hislop is with us to talk more about everything we've seen today. You won't need to bring that one up, Shaka. Goalkeeper slip. But let's talk about Portugal against Ghana. At one point, it looked as though Portugal was smooth sailing after Rafael Leão had come up and made it 3-1. But then suddenly, it looked as though Ghana might cause a bit of an upset and get right back in it.
Yeah, I thought this is a game that was kind of odd, especially, and I know you all mentioned it off the top, the way this World Cup has been going. We've either been getting a lot of goals in a very few games or very few goals in a whole lot of games. And this kind of bucked the trend. Though I have to admit, at halftime, I thought this was kind of petering out as we'd seen from so many games. And in defense of international football and World Cups, international football is generally far lower scoring than you associate with club football. And as we've seen in this tournament and in previous tournaments, the first game is so crucial. And I think teams come into them a little bit cagey. And as a result, we haven't got the goals that you would think or maybe hope. And this one was kind of heading that way. We can discuss whether Ronaldo's disallowed goal was right to be disallowed. On first look, I thought so, but I know that Portugal and Ronaldo fans may think otherwise. And then the penalty that unlocked this game. Again, I didn't think it was a penalty, but just from a purely neutral's perspective, that goal going in allowed Ronaldo to write records, as you've both mentioned, change the narrative that we've been having around Ronaldo of recent weeks. But more to the point than to this game, just open this game up. And all of a sudden, it became an end-to-end contest as Ghana recognizing that they had to get goals. And the game just opened up and it became one of the better games that we've seen this tournament. One that was not lopsided as we'd seen in the games that gave us goals.
Let's talk about the penalty being given then, Luis Miguel. I know that you're not in agreement with that given. Do you think that moment in the 30th minute, though, where Ronaldo did have a penalty call, has made the referee think twice when it came to this one? Do you think that's in his head and that's why it's been given?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Probably, because obviously this game is refereed and played and managed by, it doesn't matter if it's VAR, you have all the technology in the world. At the end of the day, it's driven by human beings who are going to be influenced by, you know, the narrative of the match itself. Look, I'm just going to make it very clear.
I meant the goal. I meant the goal that wasn't allowed because of the foul in the building.
Oh,
you knew
yeah,
it right.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I think so. But I think my point stands, right? I think that something happens to a ref when he watches or she watches the game and thinks, you know, subconsciously maybe on the aspect of what could happen thereafter. let's get back to the most important point. Kay-Marie and Shaka Hislop, that was a ridiculous penalty decision. And I'm embarrassed by it because, you know, we are now at a stage where VAR should be able to correct these things. Look, here's one thing. Number one, if you are to say to me that Cristiano Ronaldo was fouled, as opposed to the fact that it's a clear 50-50 battle, right? And the ball was won in the end by the defender because the ball was touched by his foot. That's not a penalty. If the referee is making a decision based on what he's seeing, you know, in real time, I will forgive you for that. But in the day of VAR, I think it's despicable to give that. I think it's ridiculous. Otherwise, if we give those decisions, what happens in the future? Anything, any kind of 50-50 battle is going to be a penalty. And that, to me, is really not acceptable in this day and age when you have so much technology. Now, does Portugal deserve to win the game? Because in the end, it was 3-2. And obviously, they have more talent and arguably other stronger team, better organized, more experienced. Yes, that's another argument to have. But I think that that decision obviously changed the complete narrative of that game. No way was that a penalty. If I could learn Portuguese, I would say it as well in that language.
to that point, LME, I'm in full agreement. But as Kay phrased your question, and I think that's the point here. And as you mentioned, this is a game, ultimately, as much as technology has come in, that's refereed by human beings. And while referees, and we often have Mark Clattenburg on our ESPN FC show, he's out in Qatar covering the games for the host broadcaster here in the US, would tell you that referees judge each incident on its own merit, and players' reputations don't figure into referees' minds when making calls or when they as they come into games. As a player myself, I feel exactly the opposite. I feel that you can kind of force or alter decisions in your favor as this game goes. Influence, that is absolutely the right word. And while, as we said, in the first goal that was disallowed, I thought it was a foul. I thought the referee was right to call it back. I thought it was right on the edge. But Cristiano Ronaldo's reaction to it, I think, just starts to sow that seed of doubt in the referee's mind. And then when the second opportunity comes, the referee recognizing how close a call it was to giving that foul in the first instance and allowing the goal, when that incident happens second time of asking in the second half, and he's faced with a similar decision, he's thinking, well, this time I'm going to give Ronaldo the benefit of the doubt. Now, as someone neutral, sitting in the comfort of my own home and the benefit of replays, I didn't think it was a penalty either. But in the heat of the moment, and I truly believe that players, especially players like Ronaldo with their records and reputations and their status in the game, can influence referees' decisions. And that's what you saw.
I did see, and I want to check if the stat's right, that he is the first to score penalties at three different World Cups as well.
Is that why Ronaldo was trending, Kay-Marie, I guess?
Well, I mean, I think that any time he scores a penalty...
I'm just saying what I'm seeing. I'm not calling him that. I just saw Ronaldo was trending, and that's probably supported.
That's unfair.
Because obviously it's the type of player who's going to draw penalties anyway. We know there's always that argument too. But hey, I'll tell you what, though, when Andre Ayew equalised at that point, things were looking pretty exciting. I did do the cheesy tweet, "Are you kidding me?"
Of course you did. Of course.
Suddenly, though, that's when I think you knew that things were really going to burst into life, right, Louise?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest with you, when you see it a few minutes later, once again, when Portugal score through João Felix, you see Andre Ayew like smashing his water bottle to the ground in frustration, and rightly so, because there you have it, Ghana. You got your redemption and now you can start again. And that's when Ghana really needed to be more focused than ever. And they weren't, because the continuous rat narrative of the game, which was actually my point for the first 45 minutes. The problem with Ghana, they were holding strong. It was 0-0 in the first 45, regardless of everything that had happened, is that they were so vulnerable and careless in possession. You don't have to play all these pretty patterns. Just be strong and fortify. And unfortunately, I think the emotions got the better of this Ghanaian side after equalizing, thinking, finally, we got our redemption, and they got careless. And that's where experience comes in. That's where Fernando Santos comes in. That's where you have the likes of Bruno Fernandes and Bernardo Silva, not just Cristiano Ronaldo, who can say, all right, we just conceded, but we can do it. Exactly. Exactly. A much stronger squad. And Leao, to your point, Kaymari, like changed the angles of the Portuguese attack. He's so much more of a versatile, you know, winger slash forward, you know, who can do so much damage with his pace and his vision. And obviously he made it 3-1. And that's where Ghana really should have, you know, been more aware of what was coming their way. In-game management was a massive factor.
I thought you made a couple of really good points there, LME. First of all, yes, the game really did open up and Ghana started to take the game a little bit more to Portugal, which, as I mentioned, I don't think they did a good enough job of. Well, the game was very cagey in the first 45. But to your point, LME, and I have been fairly critical of Fernando Santos. I think at times he's been a little bit too negative, or maybe shall I just say pragmatic. But then, okay, the counter to that is when you've got Cristiano Ronaldo in previous years and his superpowers to call on, you can understand that approach. But at 1-1, he brings Rafael Leao. And you're absolutely right. I thought it opened the game wide open for Portugal and really give Ghana a lot to think about. And then it allowed Bruno Fernandes a little bit more space in midfield. And let's give credit where it's due. That pass to pick out João Felix for the second goal,
wonderful.
I thought was a thing of absolute beauty
from
Bruno Fernandes. The timing for the pass for the third to Rafael Leao, two players I like a lot in Rafael Leao goodness me, no, all of a sudden
Bruno Fernandes and
João Felix, excuse me, we're really the statement goals in this, but Bruno Fernandes just getting that little more room in midfield as the game opened up. I thought credit to Bruno Fernandes, but credit to Fernando Santos for doing something that I now have to stand corrected on. I didn't think was in his wheelhouse.
The 3-2 in the 89th minute from Osman Bukhari, he actually hit the Sioux celebration. I feel it would have been a lot better if it was at 3-3, but you know what?
Hey, our producers were thinking that they thought that it was, he thought he equalized with that goal. And they were like, okay, that's great that you're imitating.
The way he ran as well, right?
Yeah, can you come back, please? Because we're actually still losing.
Just in case you didn't know, it's not Sioux, it's no. This is not an equalizer at this moment. Anyway, in the end, fair result. We've just been listing all the names, how strong they are. Why aren't Portugal more heavily favoured for the World Cup, guys? Luis?
Fernando Santos, Portugal's biggest enemy is Fernando Santos sometimes. And to Shaka's point, I was impressed with his in-game management today. But when you look at what Portugal has recently done in the Nations League, even in this qualifiers, remember how they got here in the first place. They needed to beat North Macedonia to get here, right, with all the talent that they have. Sometimes I feel there's a little bit of a tunnel vision with Santos, which is, and I'm sure I'm going to be wrong, I actually predicted for them, you know, you have to gamble sometimes in your predictions for the World Cup, right? I said Portugal might not even get out of this group because of the strengths of South Korea, which have been proven. Today they were great. Uruguay, who didn't play that great. But I thought that Portugal sometimes is limited in their own thinking and the way that they are relying too much on individual ability. And to be honest with you, I'm still not impressed because Ghana, valiant Ghana, got two goals out of them. I want to see what Portugal does when they play a real force. And I tell you what, Uruguay is going to wake up in the second game and they're going to be well up for it.
Just before we bring Jules in. Sorry, go on, Shaka.
No, I was going to say, I totally agree with everything LME just says. And as much credit as I'm giving Fernando Santos right now, against better opposition, does he make that change to bring Rafael Leao on still at 1-1?
Yeah.
The other question that may come up as they go deep in this competition, dare I say, if Portugal do get into the knockout stages, is what do you do with Cristiano Ronaldo? Because while we are giving him his credit, and rightly so, for all that he's done, for that record that he's just written, he had two guilty opportunities in the first half. to openly scoring, that he fluffed his lines. One, the second of which was a trademark header at the far post that you would put your mortgage on Ronaldo to score. But it kind of speaks to some of the frustrations around his club form. If that continues through the group stage, do you stick with Cristiano Ronaldo if they get into the knockout stages? And then what does that do? Just kind of given some of the rhetoric that we've been having around Ronaldo and his frustrations with not featuring for Manchester United, does that translate to this Portuguese dressing room if Fernando Santos dares leave him out? There's all kinds of questions and twists and turns before we start really...
Shaka, before Julian comes on, he's going to put him on because Fernando Santos scored
a goal for his side and put them ahead.
No, because he's going to give him penalties every game. I'm going to get all the Ronaldo super fans absolutely trolling me.
He was just warming up. And by the way, don't worry about who you've got going through, Luis, because Shaq has proven to all of us that you can pick a team who you've got to win the World Cup and then you can suddenly just backtrack on it after they have a really bad opening game. Argentina, for that matter. And he's sticking with the fact that he's backing and saying, no, they're not going to win anymore. So don't worry, Luis. Apparently, those are the new rules.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
It's a clause in my contract, Luis. It's a clause.
Hey, yeah, he's like Dua Lipa. He's got new rules. Right. We're going
to
get Jules in.
That one. That's excellent. Well done.
We're going to get Jules in. Apparently, Jules was looking intrigued with our chat. So our producer said, get Jules in. He looks intrigued. And he said, no, I'm not intrigued.
He's
not
so
bothered by what we were saying, Jules.
No, I agreed with everything you said. It was good. That's why I didn't really understand the he looks intrigued line, because I was just listening patiently, waiting for my turn, you know. But yeah, I agree with you.
He's a handsome Frenchman, he's always going to look intrigued.
What was your biggest takeaway from this game?
From the Portugal Ghana game, I think that defensively Portugal will have to be stronger and more solid. You can't concede two goals like that. João Cancelo has to do better on the two goals, but the second goal especially. This is too easy for Baba Rahman to get that ball and cross it in for Bukhari. For the rest, I like the way they pressed. I like that they were on the front foot from the beginning, but in the end, they didn't create that many chances. And the only thing, I think maybe I looked intrigued when Shaka said, an amazing ball from Bruno Fernandes is, because he goes between the legs of the defender that should clear that. The idea is great, but the defender had the ball, really, and he went through his legs, and then João Félix is a good finish. But I like what I saw from Portugal, because like the boy said, I'm not a fan of Fernando Santos. I thought for a long time his conservatism kind of hold them back a little bit, even if they won Euro 2016. Now I'm glad that he's encouraging them to play on the front foot. I like the 4-3-3 they played. It's just that to win this competition, they'll have to be better.
Are the boys being harsh on Ronaldo, Ronaldo?
We know Luis doesn't like him anyway, so it's not a surprise to any of us.
Jules, I'm going to get all the Ronaldo super fans.
It's too late, bro. It's too late. Anyway.
There's a couple outside my door now. Wait until Luis.
It was not a pen, and I just don't understand why VAR doesn't intervene here. I don't understand why they see to not say to the referee. By the way, an MLS referee, isn't it? That's all I'm going to say. That's what I'm going to say.
Oh my goodness.
Don't know what you're trying to suggest, Jules.
Yeah, Kay, was it a penalty, Kay Murray?
Well, yeah, because he was given the penalty, so it was a penalty.
Do you think it should have been a penalty?
I don't know if I think it should have been a penalty. Even if it could have been a penalty or not, the fact is it was a penalty. He stepped up and he took it on that stage with everything
I'm not taking him.
Of that, when the game started, saw what his country means to him. He was crying on the national anthem.
It was a big day today
for Ronaldo.
I am not taking anything away from that. I scored in 5 World Cups. Who am I? Luis Miguel Echegaray here peeling potatoes before I have to jump on this thing to say anything about the grand, majestic Cristiano Ronaldo. I totally agree. Historically speaking, what a player. That was not a penalty. It's just my argument. And in the days of VAR, it's embarrassing that it was given. That's my only point. Taking nothing away from Ronaldo. I just think that it's an absolute embarrassment that penalty was given, because it really wasn't. Because if you give that penalty, what's to say for any defender? Can they do anything in the box? It's just a terrible decision. Taking nothing away from Ronaldo, jokes aside, amazing player, shouldn't have been a pen.
All right. So anyway, that game finished 3-2. Portugal off to a winning start with those three goals, 3 points for them as well. Jules, let's talk a little bit about the games that we've already seen today. In fact, this Portugal-Ghana game just ruined our narrative somewhat because we were going to ask you about the quality of the World Cup so far with all these goalless draws. There was only one in the whole of 2018 and we've already seen, what, four at this point? Obviously, there's the Spain game and England and France. You know, France have been scoring goals. We saw these goals today in this game. But it is an overriding pointer that we are seeing in the lack of goals scored. 17 goals between these three teams here. And after that, all of these goals between them, 17 goals.
Doesn't include the Ghana, right?
And that doesn't, yeah, and that doesn't include what we've just seen, right? So we take that away because obviously this was set up and sent out before that. What have you made of the quality you've seen so far? And do you think they're just being a bit cagey? One, it's the opening games. Two, yeah, it's right in the middle of the season, the domestic season.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I don't buy the tiredness. I think a lot of people are saying maybe the players are tired. I mean, some of them haven't played for 2 weeks now. So I don't think that, I don't really think that right now the tiredness is an argument for an average level. Not all the games, but for most of the game that we've seen, it's been average at times. We've seen mistakes that we should not be seeing at that level. We've seen games, you're right, without goals, without shots. I mean, full stop, without shot on target, which, okay, you can have big chances and not have a shot on target, but still, it's not a great look. We've seen teams that, I'm sorry, I think I angered last night on English radio, Australia fans and Costa Rica fans. It's just not, they're not good teams. They're not good teams. I don't want to World Cup with no good teams. This is not on for me. Yeah. And I think this is also part of it. You're right, Kay, as well, in the fact that you said this is an opening. We've played the first games for all those teams in the World Cup. And first games are very, very special, I think. And the nerves can kick in. Some deal with them better. Look at Canada. They were great. I mean, I know they lost, but they were great. And the nerves clearly didn't impact them. For other teams, you could clearly see that the nerves were there. And it's difficult. This is the best stage ever in football. So I think that's why I'm really expecting the second game now started from tomorrow to be much better. The level to be better, the rhythm to be better, the intensity to be better, and to see more goals.
LME nodding away.
He's right. I mean, listen, like, I'm still bitter about Peru not beating Australia because Australia, I love the passion. I love the people. They're awful. It's not a good team. And, and that, again, enhances my worrying about France because, you know, they really shouldn't be conceding anything, against an Australian side like this. And Costa Rica, look, to be at the World Cup right now is the win in itself for them because they just made it against New Zealand and they're going through a horrible transitional period right now where their old players are too old, their young players are too young, there's no development within the squad. And it's tough for them from a CONCACAF side that, by the way, you know, Canada topping it and Mexico and the USMNT. Costa Rica is not good enough to be here just because of their own issues. But I agree completely.
We've got Brazil, Serbia coming up later, Sheka. But so far, we've seen every team other than those guys. Any surprises for you, whether it's good or bad, with what we've seen so far?
Well, a couple of surprises, which obviously everybody will kind of agree to in Saudi Arabia and that performance against Argentina. For me, I was expecting Saudi Arabia just to sit back, defend and soak up pressure and hope to get a chance on the break against Argentina. But let's be honest, any defense that includes Otamendi will give you a chance. But Saudi Arabia pressed high up the park and got their just rewards for it. Yes, it was a little bit on the edge and VAR had to intervene with a couple of very close offside calls. But I thought just for their bravery, they got their just rewards. And then Japan and how they responded as well. It kind of speaks to maybe a slight closing of the gap between some of the traditional big boys in world football and some of those countries just in that second tier. Listen, I accept that the likes of Costa Rica and Australia have kind of blown that theory out of the water, but that's a different discussion. But you see a lot of these teams kind of taking these opportunities and taking their moments. And Canada is a prime example of it. First World Cup in 40 years. They come out with a young squad. I think nerves played a little bit of a part for Canada, but not necessarily in an overly negative way. They just went out and played with a freedom of a team that is the first to represent their country at this level in a generation. And I thought it was incredibly refreshing to see. And that's what I enjoyed most about Canada, that they just came out and played. They played exactly as they did in World Cup qualifying in CONCACAF, where they topped CONCACAF World Cup qualifying and left us all feeling really good about their football and who they are as a footballing nation.
The coach said they're going to do it again as well. Anyway, Shekhar, we're going to let you go because we can't wait for you to face the wrath of the Ronaldo fans waiting on the other side of the door for you.
I'm just going to give them LME's address and leave him to it.
All right, thanks so much for being with us, Shekhar. Jules, you stay right where you are. We'll hear from Shekhar a bit later on. Let's talk about some of the earlier games. We saw Switzerland against Cameroon. We probably should have known that Switzerland would get a win. They are looking to make it to the knockouts for a third straight World Cup. They seem to do so well when it comes to grinding out those results. But the goal scorer, Brile Mbolo, very, very interesting story here because obviously he grew up in Basel but was actually born in Cameroon. So this has been one of the stories so far of this opening round.
Yeah, very powerful moment, I think, for all the people and, you know, there's some of us as well who have two nationalities or have two cultures of different or mix them or their children are or their parents. It's a very special moment when you play against the team or the country where you were born, where your parents were born or your dad. And then suddenly your heart is almost like split in two, to be fair. And you see him, he scores, and then he's about to go, and then he stops because I think he knows it's like, I can't do this now. And then he stops, and beautiful first time. We looked at the ESPN stats. It seems that Freddie Brickell in the 1938 World Cup did similar thing. I think maybe he scored against Germany after being born in Germany but playing for Switzerland. But Podolski did it in the Euros, but this is it, you know, first time ever. So I thought very powerful moment for Mbolo.
Luis, do you think that Jan Sommer is a Superman in disguise?
He's amazing, isn't he?
Well, yeah. It just always seems to make a big difference. The Swiss as well with one shot on target. That's why many have got them getting out of the group here. Did you have them getting out of the group in your bracket?
Yeah, I have them going pretty far, I think. I'm always impressed by the Swiss just because of how, well, it's like they are as a nation, right? Very just relaxed, resilient, neutral about everything. And then boom, they hit you when it matters. Look, at the end of the day, this is a Swiss side that, remember, they did, you know, pretty well at Euro 2020 and the way they qualified here for the World Cup as well, they did well as well. They're just very collective, very, and I'll tell you something, players like, you know, Granit Xhaka, who to me is, I mean, one of the best seasons ever, for club, obviously with Arsenal. Once they figure out how to use him the same way Mikel Arteta uses him, I think they're going to be stronger. I'm a big fan of Switzerland, and I think they can do some good things. They just have to be, you know, the biggest challenge for them is always what are you going to do against, you know, arguably, you know, tougher opposition, of course. But, you know, I see them getting out of the group.
And then there was Uruguay against South Korea. That was a game that finished goalless. Fair results.
Well, Uruguay were terrible from what I've seen from qualifiers and stuff. They're much better than that under Diego Alonso. Remember that he had to take over from El Maestro Oscar Tavares in South America, and he really gave them that spark back, that garra charrua, right? That, you know, no matter what, we're going to kill ourselves with the ball. I don't want to take anything away from South Korea because they are so good. They're more than human, son. But this wasn't the typical Uruguayan side that I was used to in the last year and a half.
All right. While we've got you here, Jules, and before we close off, we just want to speak to you about what's going on and the latest situation with the One Love armbands, because we've seen a lot of talk from the German camp today. Some saying they wondered if what they did before the game affected their results afterwards. Others saying no. Has there been any more news on the situation?
Yeah, it's a bit kicking off, to be fair. I mean, from UEFA, what FIFA wanted, sorry, was the, like, to ban those armbands, and then we never talk about them again. We've never spoken as much as those armbands that were never worn than we do now, to be fair. We saw the Belgian minister with one at the game last night. I was there against the Canadians, of course. We saw the protest from the German players. We saw the French minister very weirdly this morning saying, like, hey, what about our players as well? The French players, do something like the Germans. And Matteo Guendouzi tonight, this afternoon in his press conference, saying, hang on, she's a politician. She says what she wants. We did a statement. We did what we had to do. Now we're going to focus on the football. Everybody sees this and does this thing in the way they want. There's not one way to follow, one way to do it. We also saw that FIFA backed up today on the not allowing the Welsh fans to carry the bubble hat they have with the kind of rainbow colours on them, which were banned for the first game against the US. Now it's allowed for the Iran game tomorrow. So it seems that this is more than football even sometimes. This is more that we talk about here in Doha, which I find crazy.
Also, guys, we've got Brazil-Serbia coming up.
Ooh, baby. and Julien Lurat, remember when I was on Gab and Jules, this is exactly the lineup that I predicted. Here. I'm just saying.
tell him, Luis, though.
No, the lineup. Well, the lineup is exactly what we when I was invited on Jules' show with Gab. You know, the thing about Brazil that most fans that don't follow Brazil is that Neymar is not a striker for Coach Tite, and he's not a winger for Coach Tite. He's everywhere. He kind of acts as this weird false nine where he sits right behind Richarlison, who's Coach Tite's favorite striker. And, you know, this is a squad, Brazilian squad that's deeper than the Amazon River. I mean, the fact that Rodrigo can't start in this game and you have, Antony or Rafinha, who's going to be starting for them today, and Vinicius Jr., and then Lucas Paquetá, who, you know, is taking the minutes ahead of Bruno Guimarães. That's how good this team is. I'm very excited to see what this Brazilian side does against a very strong Serbian side, who I believe Julian Dusan Vlahović is not starting as well.
I haven't seen the lineups, to be fair, because I got connected. But potentially, yeah. I don't know if you can play a front two against Brazil, to be fair. I would have loved to see Mitrovic and Vlahović against Marquinhos and Thiago Silva, because I think they could have created problems for the Brazilian defense, which is maybe, as we explained when you came on our show, that the slight weakness maybe is over the Brazilians' fullbacks, Thiago's age, and the fact that he prefers a back three now than a back four, all that kind of stuff. But to play with a front two against them, you need to also behind you then have the resources to be able to block the four forwards that we see tonight. So I can understand why they slightly tweaked the system to go with just one up front. But again, I haven't seen the full lineup, so I'm not too sure.
Yeah, we did hear from Stojkovic so in the press conference last night, and they said to him about the four strikers. Obviously, you've explained the situation there, Luis. But anyway, they said to him, if four strikers could play tomorrow for Brazil? And he said, did you say four strikers will play tomorrow? It's over for us. It's finished. Now, obviously, he was having a bit of a joke, but as Jill said, he probably has adjusted accordingly. So that game is going to be great to watch. It's coming up, and we will be live with you right after it. So make sure you join us then on ESPN FC Daily. Thanks for being with us, Jules.